Ethan, I just thought for about 2 minutes of a witty intro to this episode, but I'm just drawing a complete blank right now. So I think we should just start the podcast. What do you think?
I think so too.
All right, let's do it. All right, Ethan, Biathlon is back. We have completed the first trimester of Biathlon this season, and it's been pretty exciting, and Anse Le Grand Bornand did not disappoint. I mean, had some good racing this weekend, some surprises, some chaos, and I think we're going to get into it this today with our podcast here.
Yeah, it was, oh my gosh, watching the Le Grand Bornand World Cup at the end of the first trimester for the past few years is always something I look forward to, and it's always just so fun and almost feels like it's a world champs or like a major championship race, but it's just a regular World Cup weekend that's just extra fun, I
Yeah.
guess.
That actually brings us, I think, to our first hit today is just the crowd. I mean, the crowd has been, like you said, great for the last few years. The Le Grand Bornand was the first venue that was allowing spectators since the COVID shutdown. So there was a lot of hype, a lot of excitement about, fans are finally back in biathlon. And so that weekend, I think maybe last year, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. But the crowd was able to really back that up this year with just another amazing weekend, an amazing turnout.
Yeah, and it's yeah, I saw reports early in the week that it was raining and it looked kind of miserable to be racing, let alone standing out there watching people race. And I was a little nervous about the crowds because this year hasn't had spectacular crowds to say the least. And I kind of had high hopes for Le Grand Bornand, and they always, and this year they continued to kind of exceed those expectations. And it was so awesome to watch the crowds along the whole course, hear them in the range when the French athletes were shooting, and even when some of the other athletes were shooting, which we'll get into in a little bit. But it was so fun to watch.
Yeah, and to think that France is literally playing in the Soccer World Cup final on Sunday, and the crowd turned out for the mass start events. It just goes to show you how popular biathlon has become in France, and largely thanks to Martin Fourcade. But here, so here's a question: is there's a few venues that you can almost, guarantee there's going to be a big turnout. Antholz, the two German venues, Oberhof and Ruhpolding. Czech Republic has been a really massive, becoming a massive World Cup the last couple of years. I think it's almost time that we include Le Grand Bornand as one of those major stops on the tour, and start thinking about it as like one to hit, especially, I mean, if you're a French athlete, you definitely want to perform well there.
I totally agree. I think, like you said, the French always, the question going into the Le Grand Bornand weekend is how are the French going to do at home? And I think some of the other athletes are kind of seeing that and being like, oh, if we can do well here against the French at home with all their fans like behind them and supporting them, that's kind of a big win in everybody's book if they can go to Grand Bonnat and beat the French.
Yeah, and it's funny because I've been listening to a few podcasts, a few interviews, reading some stuff, and every single person who is inside the fence, so like whether you're an athlete or a coach or a service like Wax Tech, every single person reported that whether it was during warm up, during training, even definitely during the race, the crowd was always cheering for you and cheering for everyone on the side of the course, and just the atmosphere. It was just electric. I mean, it's like that's the best way to describe it. Just an absolutely electric atmosphere. So, yeah, really, really good turnout for the crowd. And I mean, I think that's two for two for Anse Le Grand Bornand. I think it's, they're becoming a staple on the biathlon scene. And if they keep turning out like this, it's gonna you know, maybe they'll get bumped into the second trimester, you know, the big with the big three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's always so fun seeing in the head-to-head races, seeing the athletes, almost every athlete that comes down to finish stretch, you know, like waves to the crowd or like tries to get them going a little bit, whether they're winning the race or they're coming in 60th in the pursuit, the crowd still gives everyone, maybe gives the French a little bit more, but gives everyone love and support. And that's always a wonderful thing to see.
Yeah. Unconditional love of biathlon. Mm-hmm. It's really great to see.
Yeah.
So we're moving on to the miss, and this is probably one of the biggest controversies that we have seen in biathlon in a while. And I don't even know if controversy is the right term, but there was something that was completely out of the ordinary that affected majorly, drastically affected the pursuit races on Saturday. So I did a little brief overview of what was going on my YouTube channel. There was a lot of people tweeting about it, a lot of conversation on Reddit as well. And basically, what happened was the course was actually not prepared correctly. And for those of you who are not wise in the ways of course maintenance, you know, you have the groomer, the big machine, the Piston Bully, the Pernoth, depending on what brand they have, goes around, grooms the trails. And when you pack the snow in like that, the longer it sits and the colder the temperature, the more it will, it'll freeze. It'll gloss over, even become icy. So many times, you know, if it's not going to be very cold at night, like maybe it gets down to, you know, 10, 15 degrees Fahrenheit at night, you can groom the night before and the track will set. It's called setting. The track will set very nicely. It'll be nice and firmed and packed in the morning. If the course, or if it's going to get very cold at night, I'm talking like 0 degrees Fahrenheit, you actually want to groom in the morning, because if you groom at night and you let it set overnight, it's going to become a sheet of ice. It's going to become like an ice rink. And no matter what you do to the course, it's going to be too firm, too hard packed. And it sounds like the organizers underestimated the weather the night, Friday night going into Saturday morning. It sounds like they groomed the night before. And sure enough, the course turned into an absolute ice rink out there. And while that is tough for everyone, it became extra tough for people specifically skiing on Fisher skis. And, you know, I'll say for the most part, I know, Ethan, you might have some experience here as well. But for the most part, I don't think the ski brands are too different. Like, there's a few things when you put on different skis, you can tell, like, oh, this one, you know, maybe it feels a little bit springier. Maybe this one feels a little bit, you know, flatter. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a few minor differences that come with a lot of skiing on different brands to really pinpoint those differences. But one of the major things that Fisher has been doing in the last few years they have been trying to cut out the edge of the ski. So if you think about the sidewall of a ski, it comes straight down and then it takes that 90 degree turn into the base. And what Fisher has been doing the last couple of years is they've been cutting that corner off and adding like a 45 degree angle at that corner there. And the reason for that is there are actually a lot of places on the course where you kind of are skiing on the edge a little bit. You definitely want to be riding a flat ski if you're thinking about good ski technique, but there's a few sections, like for example, on an uphill, you actually do want to dig that edge of the ski into the snow. And Fisher's justification or their idea here was, if you can wax that 45 degree angle, that very slight cut out of that edge, you should be able to theoretically have another flat surface for your ski to glide on as it goes down the trail, which is great in normal conditions, but in sheer ice rink conditions, there's absolutely no edge to try to dig into the ice and try to maintain balance. And so while we saw very amateurish skiing out there from a lot of athletes, like, just watch everyone, every single athlete who comes into the finish stretch looks like they got their weight stuck in the middle, weight back a little bit, just almost just trying not to fall. But specifically Fisher athletes it was bad. Like Johannes Tingisbo looked like he, I mean, the announcers thought he was sick. They thought he might have, like, you know, it looked like he was about to pass out. He couldn't even stand on his skis. That's why everyone thought he was, you know, under the weather or something.
It was so hard to watch, especially him on his last few laps in that pursuit. Like, they cut to Lagerud at one point, and then they cut back to Johannes Thingnesbo, and Christensen is right there with him, but he left the range 10 seconds ahead. And then they cut to a replay of Johannes Thingnesbo, like, just the pretty flat, straight part of the trail, just almost go down. And it looked like he was learning how to ski. And it looked like a lot of them were learning how to ski again. And in the women's race, I noticed that some of them were just double pulling instead of even trying to skate push. And it was hard to watch, but it was interesting to notice that it was predominantly the athletes on Fishers that were struggling.
Yeah, it was interesting because obviously Sean Doherty had an absolutely incredible race in the sprint, and I had super high hopes for him. I think most Americans did. And I remember I was texting my dad during the race because he was watching it. And I think I remember texting him. I was like, Sean looks like shit. And I was like, really, like, upset because I was like, man, he did so well yesterday. Like, how often do you just, like, turn around from, you know, having one of the best, probably like the best sprint race of his career to, like, just getting absolutely dropped? And obviously not understanding at the time that, you know, there's some crazy Fisher issues going on. I was like so disappointed. I was like, man, like, he must have caught like an overnight bug or something. Like, man, this sucks. And then obviously I'm like, you see Johannes Thingnesbo looks like shit. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, what's going on here? And yeah, then, like, I don't know. I started noticing that people on social media were talking like, oh, it's like, you know, they're all sick, like there's a big bug going through. And then people are like, no, it's the skis or it's the course. And yeah, sure enough, you just kind of pick up on the pattern that people with Fishers are just, they got nothing. So I would say, I think I haven't talked to Sean about the race, but I'm sure he's probably majorly frustrated with it. I think he's lucky that he was able to get into the mass start. So he was able to, you know, kind of bounce back a little bit and have another opportunity. But I know, I'm sure for him, that's probably got to be super frustrating. And, you know, even like for Johannes Thingnesbo as well, like, you know, he comes in first, like, I mean, most dominant athlete out there by far. And he can't hold a candle to Lagerud or Christiansen. So it's that's super frustrating.
Yeah, and watching the women's pursuit, it was almost like immediately after the first shooting, everyone that was on Fishers was completely out of contention.
Not even that. I think it was the first downhill under the bridge as you approach the range. Yeah. I specifically, like, at this point, I realized, I was like, okay, we got to watch for Fishers because, you know, the men. Elvira Oiberg put in, like, 10 seconds on that lead group because that lead group was Magnussen and Persson, who are both on Fishers. And Oiberg puts 10 seconds on them on the downhill just because she can get the edge around the turn. And it was just like, uh-oh, this does not look good. But that's, talk about frustrating. I think Persson shot 19 for 20 and ended up falling backwards in the race. Like, she finished worse than when she started, which is crazy. In the men's pursuit, I think Quentin Fillmaillet shot clean, started bib number 8 and finished number 7. That's crazy. You know, unfortunately, there's, you know, nothing you can do about that. I reached out to some of my friends who are on the World Cup and just try to get some perspective, you know, for us lay person here. Like, what if Johannes Thingnesbo was like, this is not good, I'm borrowing some Solomons from Christensen. Can he do that? And unfortunately, the answer is no, because, you know, these guys, a lot of these athletes have contractual obligations with these brands. And it's more than just, oh, you know, I ski on Fisher because I like Fisher. You know, they're signing contracts, and Fisher is probably giving Johannes Thingnesbo a ton of money. I'm talking close to six figures, you know, of sponsorship money. So he, every single picture and video that's ever taken of him is on Fishers. So, I'm guessing what'll happen, unfortunately for everyone. Fisher's going to come out with a cold ski that has an edge, and they're just going to say, "Yep, looks like you're going to need to buy this one now, and keep it in your, your repertoire just in case it's an icy day." So.
And I think, at least in my opinion, the worst part about all this is looking at my fantasy biathlon team. Five
Oh
out of
man.
the six athletes on my team ski on Fisher.
So when I realized that the Fisher was the issue, I immediately went back and tried to change my women's team. But at that point, they had already it already it's like within an hour before the start, so I can't change my team. And I'm so mad because I had two Fisher athletes and a Solomon athlete, and I tried changing it to I think like I'm pretty sure I tried. I was just like, I don't know all the ski everyone's ski brand off the top of my head, but I was like, I just got to get Tandervold, Vitozzi, and Elvira Oiberg. And sure enough, they went 1-2-4 in the pursuit, and I'm like, dang it, if I just did this 5 minutes earlier, I would have murdered that day on fantasy. But all right, let's go talk about a more fun topic here. Crazy battle between Sweden and France right now. Anna Magnusson was the only athlete on the Swedish women's team who had not earned a podium yet, and suddenly she gets her victory in the sprint. Lynn Persson right behind her. Hanna Öberg a little bit flat this weekend, but Elvira very strong in both winning the pursuit and coming in fourth in the mass start. But then you have the French women, Julia Simon, obviously making her name as the overall leader, good one on the team. But then you have a lot of these younger women like Lou Jaminot and Sophie Chavot and some of the more experienced athletes like Anais Chevalier Boucher, who were up there. We got a little bit of a battle going on between Sweden and France on the women's side.
Yeah, and it's super cool to see because Sweden and France are always up there in the relays too, and seeing them kind of battle it out in a sprint race was fun to watch. And it's awesome that Magnussen got her first podium, let alone her first win. And Julia Simon finishing in 15th as, the yellow bib and the French team's best woman at the moment right now, you'd be like, okay, she kind of had a bad day. But then to hear that she's the fourth French girl or French woman on the day kind of speaks volumes to the rest of the French women and what they're capable of. And it should be a really fun battle to watch them and Sweden go at it for those nations points the rest of the season.
Yeah, and it's crazy because maybe it's just home field advantage or the crowd or something, but I think everyone had Sweden pretty locked up as like the best team, and then by going 1-2 in that sprint, and not even like Oiberg, it was your 3-4 athletes went 1-2, so it was kind of looking like hey, for a minute there, the Sweden just keeps getting better, but yeah, but then all of a sudden in the relay, or sorry, in the pursuit and mass start, France just came right back and had a really good one. And then when you think about back in Högfjällsund, France beat Sweden in the relay, and I think we were like, it happens, you can't be on all the time. France definitely had a really good race, whatever. But now I'm wondering, is France better than we're giving them credit for? Are they fighters? Are they going to be continuing this fight against, this untouchable Swedish women's team?
I mean, they've shown that they can compete with them, but I think the Swedish women's team is a little too consistent and a little too strong for them to fight it out for winning that Nations Cup. And looking at the Nations Cup standings right now, the women are actually 9 points behind Germany. So Germany's second, France is third. And I think
Really?
France will be liking their chances to take that second spot away from Germany when they come back after the holiday break.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised to hear that because looking at the overall standings right now, you got Simone and Elvira are 1 and 2, and then Denise Herman Wick is fourth. And then here you go, Lynn Pearson is sixth. That's Sweden's number two. Hanna Öberg ninth, Sweden's number three. Anna Magnusson 11th, Sweden's number four. And then it just goes France, Germany, France, France, France. And then a couple Germans down in like 17, 18. So I'm surprised to hear that there's that Germany is ahead of them. But Germany did start off pretty well in Kontiolahti, especially their younger ones on the team, Anna Vidal and Sophia Schneider. So yeah, I don't know. This is I think this is shaping up to be a way more interesting race than I think I expected, at least.
Same here, and I'm really excited to watch some more relays when biathlon comes back, because
Yeah.
I think France will like their chances to win at any day, and Sweden and Germany will like their chances too. And I think there's going to be a lot of confidence coming back after the break, and some people might make some mistakes, but I think it should be some really fun racing to watch.
Yeah. I mean, we know that the Swedish, or sorry, the women's field is just wide open. Like, so many different nations represented in the top 10. But yeah, it would be so great if we could get the relay field to get, kind of more competitive as well, because then that would like I mean, that's what you want if you're a fan, right? You want it to get exciting. We got the Italians obviously doing well last weekend. Nothing really show stopping for them this weekend, but you know that they're going to be a force as well. So, yeah, the women's field is just what a great way to start the season. If for biathlon, for that women's field, like just so many different names. You have Lisa Vitozzi, who kind of made a little bit of a comeback. Tandervold has stepped up as, Norway's number one. Julia Simone, nobody really saw her coming, and now she's wearing the yellow bib at Christmas. Øyberg is right there in second. A lot of people had her being the overall winner, and even though I don't think she's performed at her best, she's still right there in second. Denise Herman's been solid, had some awesome performances. The only really honestly, the only person we haven't seen a great performance from was Markéta Davidova. Like, she's been consistent and she's there right in eighth place, right in the thick of things, but she hasn't had her day at the top of the podium yet. So, pretty much down like 1 through 15th place right now on the women's side is just everyone's had a, really good start to the season. So. So let's change back over to the men's side here. This is a completely different story. Norwegian dominance. The mass start was like, I mean, why did anyone else even bother showing up? Norway was just turning this into a national time trial. And even when some people, made a few mistakes and the field started to spread out a little bit, Alexander, or sorry, Philip Anderson was just like, oh, I'll join the party, and jumped right in there and, filled that gap. So, I mean, like, Johannes Dahle to win the mass start, I think is, I don't think anyone saw that coming except for me last year. But no, I mean, I'm really glad to see that he's back because, he had a little bit of a rough time last year, kind of maybe thinking that he was a secure World Cup member, but nope, you got to earn it on Norway. But no, it's not even close between Norway and any other nation. And when you look at the World Cup standings as well, Lagrid and Bo are just, they're on another planet compared to the rest of the field.
I was watching that race, the mass start, and I couldn't help but think that if they're all skiing together and racing together, surely it's going to throw them off. But they do it all summer, all fall, and going into the season and knowing that they're comfortable, like racing with each other and alongside each other, can only help them. Because we've seen in the past when teammates are kind of duking it out on the course and then come in to shoot, and neither of them really have a good shooting, and then they kind of lose their spot in the standings. But it was almost like funny watching them just like switch out who was in the lead, who was leading. To have six of the top nine, I think that's what that is.
I can't wait for Ingrid Landmark Tandervold's vlog from that week, because hopefully she can get a little bit of atmosphere inside the Norwegian camp, inside their housing, because I mean, I can only imagine what the atmosphere must be like in there. Like it's not just like, there's always like, oh, we got the best guy on the team or on the circuit, we're always in good moods because he's always doing well. It's not just that, it's the whole team. Like the worst literally the worst athlete on your team is Tarje Bo, who's ranked 16th, much better than many nations number one. And Tarje is just a veteran. Like, you don't look at Tarje Bo and just, be like, oh, like, he's not good. So yeah, they got 1, 2, 3, they got 5 in the top 10 right now, which is that is so dominant. It's incredible.
I honestly think that on a men's relay day, everyone else should just be fighting for second, because there's no way anyone's touching or getting close to Norway.
Yeah. So we have, here's a question. We got Emilien Jacqueline in third, quite a ways back from the top two. Fabian Cloud in fifth, and then Phil Maye in eighth. And I don't think that we've seen Phil Maye really come alive yet. I think he showed signs of greatness in ALGB, but I don't think he's truly come alive yet. So let's assume Cloud and Jacqueline continue their good racing, and Phil Maye becomes alive. And now you got three French guys in the top six. It'll be Bo, Ligrid, Jacqueline, Christiansen, Cloud, and then Phil Maye. Unless, maybe Seb or Ponsaloma can jump in there. But if Phil Maye can get back to form, does France have a fighting chance to beat Norway in a relay?
Maybe. That's a good question. I think if Johannes Tingesbo has one of the worst races of his season on a relay day and France has a good race, I think maybe. But Johannes Tingesbo always turns it on for relay days. And it's tough to say that anyone's going to beat Christiansen on that last leg, let alone that last shooting. I don't think France has a super strong case to beat Norway in a relay, but they sure are going to try, and it's going to be super fun to watch them try.
Yeah, their fourth guy is Antonin Giganot, who is ranked 22nd, which, again, not bad, but when you got, Norway's fourth guy is 7th,
yeah,
that's a pretty big difference. So, we're going to go back over to the women's side. One of the perks of not being the first podcast out after the weekend is we get to wait for some news to come out, some news to break. And today, the news came out that Marta Olsbu Roysland will be rejoining the circuit for Poke Luca. So, that's, the first race is right after Christmas, starting January 5th. Where is she going to fall into this chaos of a women's field that we got going on right now? Is she going to come back and immediately assert herself at the front? Or is she going to be like a Doro who's kind of, 10th place right now? What do you think?
I think she's going to take some time to kind of warm up back into it. I mean, she has a ton of experience racing on the World Cup. So I think she'll be able to come back with a bang, but she might not show the form that she showed last year, where she's winning race after race after race right away when she comes back. But I think she'll get back to competing for the podium and wins pretty much every race. Maybe
not this first week back in Pokljuka, but maybe Ruhpolding and then Antholz in the world champs, I think we'll start to see her kind of take a good shot at that yellow bib.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little torn. On one hand, I'm kind of like, it's Marta Olsby-Roysland. She was so good last year. But then on the other hand, I look at, Phil Maillet, and I'm like, well, he's currently ranked eighth. So, is Roysland's also a little bit older. Not saying that she's old, but there's a lot of young blood in the top 10 right now. So I'm wondering, is she going to need it? Yeah, is she going to need a weekend to sort of dust the break the rust off a little bit, get back into her racing ways? I think if she can, starting with 0 points, I mean, she the Julia Simon has 471, but the majority of the top 10 have like 300 or so points. If she can finish out the weekend in like 20th place, do you think she should, do you think she'll be happy with that? Or do you think, she's going to be going right for the like, oh, yeah, I want those 90 point, sprint pursuit back to back wins?
I think she's old enough and has enough experience to be happy with coming out of the weekend in 20th place overall. And I think she'll understand that it'll take some time to kind of get back into it. I don't know if she's been doing any races at all, or if this is going to kind of be her official start to the season. Do you know that?
I don't. I was looking that up earlier. I don't think she's really done anything. Yeah, I think she's just been at home training. And sorry, and I do want to clarify. I believe the reason that she's been out is because she did get sick right in the fall, right as the season was approaching, and so she decided not to start the World Cup just because she was ill. I don't think it was COVID. I don't think there was mental motivation issues at all. I think it was simply just a oh, I got sick, and then it took me a little bit longer to overcome that sickness. So, but apparently, she announced today that she's feeling good. She's ready to come back. So, but to answer your question, no, I don't believe that she's done any racing. Definitely not on the IBU Cup. Maybe some Norwegian Cup stuff, maybe some local stuff, but nothing that I've seen.
Okay. Well, in that case, she might come off a lot fresher than a lot of the athletes that are already on the World Cup and have raced, 3 weeks in a row. She might kind of come back with a bang and have a little edge up on everyone, starting her season a little later.
Yeah. I bet what's going to happen is she's going to put up some pretty good ski times, like, 15th or top 10 maybe. But I bet she's going to shoot really well. Something about Marta just kind of lends me to believe that she's going to take that confidence of being like, "Oh, this is where I belong." Like, "Yeah, sorry you guys missed me last weekend, but this is where I belong." And I think she's going to take it smart, and she's going to be like, I'm not going to kill myself, going out there as hard as I possibly can in race number one. I'm just going to take it at 90%. I'm going to hit every single one of my targets, and I bet she's going to have some good results. So, that would be awesome if Tanervold can get a second teammate here, considering how well Norway has been doing, in the relays without her or Tyrlekov. It would be great to add another top 10 caliber athlete to the Norwegian team. That would help them a lot.
That'd help them a lot when we start getting into some mixed relays too.
Yep, and that's what we're getting into right when we come back. Single mixed relay and mixed relay next weekend. Not next weekend, the weekend of the 8th, 7th, and 8th. So, yeah, big news. Marta Olsby-Roysland coming back. Wasn't sure where she's been or what she's been up to, but there she is. She's coming. Right, spare round, Ethan. What is the best Christmas present for a biathlete?
Oh man, we talked about this and put it on here before we started recording, and I said I would think about this the whole time, and I have been thinking about it, and I still am not 100% sure what the best gift is.
I think there's two different levels of biathletes, though. There's like, are you buying a present for a World Cup athlete, or for a, you know, a kid who's getting into biathlon, right? Because those are going to be two very different presents.
That's true. That's true. As someone that's kind of getting into biathlon, one thing I would say that you might not think about right away is a few pairs of good gloves, because I have ripped many a holes in my skiing gloves due to biathlon, and I would always appreciate some more gloves.
I like that. I was going to say, I was also thinking from the perspective of a younger athlete, a good heart rate monitor watch, a watch that has GPS, heart rate monitor, that can really help your training, you know, get you to the next level. So
yeah. Nice.
There you go. For all the parents who listen, or if you're an athlete, send this to your parents. But speaking of that, the best way to support us and help us with the podcast is to share it. We love talking about biathlon, and if you like listening about biathlon, feel free to share this with your friends who like listening about biathlon. But yeah, be sure to give us a like, share the podcast, and I guess we'll see you after the new year. Later.